Blog Talk Radio.
And as is usual, I test the music before we begin, and it works just fine. And suddenly when we go live, it will not play. I click it, and it just does not go. So we will dispense with the music. Welcome. It's Monday evening. We weren't able to be with you last week. Sorry we missed you, and sorry you missed us. But sometimes with a small operation, there's just not a lot we can do. And sometimes schedules and travels and things like that kind of get in the way. And, we do have a life outside of talk radio and writing for Madison's. And so once in a while, I do have to live that life. Anyway, it's Michael Murphy with the Voice of Reason on Madison's CPC Open Rebellion Radio. It's Monday evening, and we're certainly glad to have you with us. A little bookkeeping as we normally do before we get started. We talk about the other shows we have on Tuesday and Thursday at 6 p.m. Central. We have host Danielle and Dina and Richard. They tag team. They swap off. Sometimes it's one of them. Sometimes it's all three of them. You never know what you're going to get. They always have some interesting things and some hosts and some guests and things like that. So we hope you'll take the time to catch them either live or on the podcast later. And on Wednesday we have Cindy's Corner, and she has a weekly look at fashion and travel and all sorts of things that a lot of people find interesting. And so we hope we'll check that out once again, either live or with the podcast. A reminder, of course, our website is www.madisonscpc.com. That's as in James Madison, and MadisonsCPC.com. Our call-in number is 773-897-6299. And if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question, if you'll just press 1, it'll give me a little icon that lets me know you'd like to come on air. And I'll try to remember to repeat that number later. I'm not very good at that, so hopefully you remember it or wrote it down, 773-897-6299. I have a tendency to once I get started talking or get a guest on, we just sort of go with it. And next thing I know, my time is up, and I have forgotten to remind you of that number. Tonight we're going to have a guest. We're going to have a fellow on that. How many people get a you just kind of get a burr in under your saddle, and you say, somebody ought to do something. And Charlie's one of those guys. Charlie got a burr under his saddle, and he said, somebody ought to do something. And he looked in the mirror one day and said, by George, that someone's me. And we'll introduce Charlie a little later, and we'll let him tell you about his ride against the tide and what his plans are. I met Charlie in person, actually, last week. Had an opportunity to make a little road trip, and that's part of why I was not with you last week. And Charlie's an interesting fellow, and we hit it off straight away. We were both at the same meeting. We did not meet specifically to get to know each other. We just both happened to be going to the same place the same night, so that kind of worked out for us. We are going to talk a little bit about, of course, as we normally do, the news of the day and the past week, and we'll get to Charlie here in about 10 to 15 minutes. First off, we want to look at some of the articles on Madison's. Once again, I'm not going to read these articles to you. I'm not going to tell you what they're about. That's your job. I see my job as a writer and a radio host to try to motivate you, to try to get you, to spur you into action. When I wrote my novel, that's sort of what I was trying to do. And then I realized that hardly anybody reads anymore. So many people get their news in memes. Or memes, or however you want to say it, headlines and tweets. Very few people even read articles or read more than a couple, three paragraphs of articles. People's attention span is very short. And to sit down and read a book It's very tough to get people to even think about reading a book. So that's one reason I've only written one, because I have others in my mind that I would like to write. And I feel like maybe if I can get those same points across in articles and on the radio, maybe I'll hit more people. Time will tell, I suppose. Anyway, back to Madison's collusion, the real reason the mainstream media protects Hillary. Good article there. Hope you'll take a look at that. Keep your principles or join the pack. That's a question. And this election cycle has been quite interesting. And we're gonna know here in just a very short time who our next president's gonna be. And regardless of who wins, it's going to be interesting. I think we're going to face some very serious challenges in the nation and in the world. And I'm not so sure that either one of these people is the right person that is up to the task. And I'm just hoping that there's enough of us out there to grab a hold of the debris and shape it into something that will resemble our republic, and that we will be able to go forward. I'm too old to move and too young to die. And so, so just watch out. How seriously should we be taking polling data now? You guys know me. I'm not somebody who likes government control. I want everybody to stay away. If I was to pick one law, if we were going to elect the government was going to come in and say one thing, it would maybe to get rid of polls, because I think it's the biggest service to the public. There are a lot of people out there that have no clue about what's going on. And they look at the polls, they want to vote for a winner. So if somebody's shown in being in the lead, there's a lot of people out there just going to vote for whoever's in the lead in the polls. And in reality, the polls don't really matter. We need to be figuring some things out on our own. So anyway, I'm not real crazy about the polls. I do take a look at them from time to time. I'm a little more apt to look at the, there are several sites that look at the Electoral College, because really a national poll, we do not elect, thank goodness we do not elect presidents by popular vote, or New York and Chicago and a handful of cities like that would always elect our president. So we absolutely do not want that. So I do like to kind of look at the Electoral College, but that would require a poll in all 50 states, and that gets a little difficult and very expensive. So I don't know how accurate that is either. This day in history, always a popular, very popular article. It's on there every day. Take a look at that and learn some of the interesting things that happened on this day, anywhere from just a few years ago to hundreds of years ago. Always very interesting. How politicizing the military puts national security at risk is another article. Hillary's emails allowed Clinton Foundation donors to get favors on a global scale. What a shock. I know you all are completely shocked that there was any pay for play, so to speak, with between the Clinton Foundation and the State Department and the government. But there it is. Young James Madison, the scholar. I'll tell you what, I love James Madison. It's when people ask me what my favorite founder was, it is very, very difficult, because I think it depends on the day. There's times I really, sometimes I'm very partial to Washington. I'm always, Jefferson is always right up there at the top of the list, and of course Madison as well. So when somebody says, pick your favorite founder, it's almost like me saying, pick your favorite child. There's times when I was the only son, so I was always the favorite, and I was also the one they hated the most. Respect. Happy Halloween. Pack your bags, grab your passports, join me on a trip. That's something from Cindy, from Cindy's Corner. Those are some of the main things that are on Madison's. And there's a few other things kind of going on in the world. I want to kind of step back and take a little bit of a look at. I wrote an article some time ago, And Madison's recently picked it up and reran it lately, and it's been getting quite a bit of comments and shares called Cloward and Piven Coming to Fruition. If you do not know who Cloward and Piven is, you might go back, you know, check their Madison's. The it was recently republished, so it's up there kind of towards the top. If you have trouble finding any of my articles, you can actually go to the tab that says Our Team and click on Michael Murphy. And then when you go to when you tab down there, you'll be able to find all of my articles either right there handy and for the latest ones, as well as all the ones in the archive. You can go all the way back since we began. But Cloward and Piven, of course, were two socialist professors at Columbia. And their idea, of course, was, this started back in the 60s, was to overwhelm the system. And there's no doubt that is what has happened. And if we do suffer an economic collapse, it's going to be the Cloward and Piven strategy, because we, you know, with essentially $20 trillion in debt, and that's just actually the out-and-out money that we owe, plus the unfunded liabilities, which is, you know, promises, Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, other things that add up to over $100 trillion. How can we possibly pay that? How can we meet those responsibilities? We simply can't. And so the bottom line is I invite you to take a look at that article and go back into it. The meeting I met Charlie at that we're going to talk about here in a little bit has to do with the Convention of States project and working on an Article 5 convention. We've talked about that in the past. We did an entire show on it. I wrote an article after that. I wrote an article last week called The Last Best Hope. We're continually fighting and debating and what have you like that with people who do not like this idea. I don't know why. I don't know how you pick part of the Constitution and say, we don't like that part and we're not going to do that part. That part's dangerous. But the rest of it we really like and we're going to do that. I just don't know how you justify that. And I don't know how you justify saying, well, we're going to nullify only. We just want to tell the government to go pound sand. And that's what we do. I would love to do that. Go pound sand. IRS, go pound sand. What happened to my house? How come there's a red ape? How come I can't get in my house? I don't. You can't qualify the IRS. You can't. We're going to have to do that at the level of a bunch of states together, as in Article 5. Same thing with Obamacare. Obamacare doesn't care what state you're in. Obamacare deals with you directly, and your state has to say about it or do about it. So your state cannot nullify Obamacare. Your state would not be able to nullify the EPA. State decides they're going to come in here and don't like the fact that you've built a fish pond in your backyard, you're going to be in trouble. Your state's going to get in the way. And you're just not best. So all you people out there that think that nullification or interposition is the way to go, sorry you feel that way. I don't agree with you, and a lot of people don't agree with you. And you have yet to explain to me how that's going to work. I keep asking, you keep telling me that's what we have to do. You've never explained to me how it will work. So there. Where was I? I got off on a tangent, didn't I? Regulated. I wrote an article last week about regulation. I invite you to go and read it. It's about the Second Amendment. But regulation shows up in a couple, three places in our Constitution. The Commerce Clause talks about regulating commerce. And, of course, the Second Amendment talks about uses the term regulated. And it's a term that we look at. Well, regulation now is when Congress or some agency comes in and says, okay, to do this, this, and this, you have to do this, this, and this. If you don't do that, you're going to be in violation. We're going to fine you and yada, yada, yada. And regulated means that's what they've done. That agency has regulated you. Actually, back then, that's not what it meant. Back then, regulation indicated that you were prepared, that you were ready, that you were trained, and that you were able. And so a well-regulated militia was one that was that was ready. And also discusses defense of the state, not the nation, the state. So I invite you to go in there and read that article and go back and look at some of that, kind of refresh your memory. It's a short article, and I hope you'll take a look at that and share it. A couple other things here before we get to Charlie. We'll take a short break, and I'm going to bring Charlie on. He's on the line holding here patiently. I'm glad to have him on hold here. In the last several days, HSBC issued, I think it was about 5 days ago, issued a red alert. They are forecasting the possibility of one of the worst economic collapses or stock market crashes in the nation's history. Hard to say exactly what, you know, if you're in 1999, 1997, 2008, we don't want to return to any of those, but they and others have been forecasting something similar. I'm not a guru in that. All I can tell you is I don't have my money in the stock market. Okay. I've missed a little bit of the rise up, but when it collapses, I'm not going to get collapsed either. But to insult to injury, Deutsche Bank is in very difficult straits right now. Germany's kind of bankrolling the EU. And of course, England did their little Brexit thing and got out of there. And we now seem to be pushing Deutsche Bank to pony up their share of the losses from 2008-2009. Now, why are we waiting 2016 to do that? I don't know, but the bottom line is they're pushing for that, and if that does go through, that could be a real problem. Another article I saw this morning that kind of caught my eye, and it's something I've been aware of for a while. Millennials like socialism. Not a big surprise. I've talked to my grandkids, and they're taught in school that socialism is just an alternative form of government. They are not taught the failures of it, the problems with it, or anything. It's really discouraging. And on top of that, millennials think that George Bush killed more people than Stalin. Now, Stalin is responsible for somewhere around 30 to 40 million deaths, many more than Hitler. I'm not sure where all those bodies are if Bush killed more than that. So we need to kind of take a look. We need to be thinking about that. And with that in mind, as we go back and think about, and I mentioned the Young Madison deal, and I know we've had Bill Bayo with Founders Keep on. That's one of our missions, is to teach people. And we know the schools aren't doing it. And so we've got to reach out. We've got to teach these kids. We've got to teach adults the truth about socialism and communism and what our republic is and what it can do. And the one last thing I want to talk about before we go to a quick break is Russia. Things are really tense in the world. I don't know if you've been paying attention or not, but a couple of weeks ago, Russia did an exercise where they simulated a nuclear attack, and they involved something like 40 million citizens in that exercise. Now, I have a friend who works with a fellow from Ukraine, and this fellow in the Ukraine said that his relatives were involved in this exercise. They were not told what it was about or why. They were just told to do it. And of course, when you're living in one of those fine socialist communist countries, when you're told to do something, you do it. And of course, we've also got the issues between France and Russia over some of the stuff going on in Syria. We've got the U.S. and Syria, U.S. and France over Syria have, excuse me, U.S. and Russia have shut down diplomatic relations over the Syria situation. And Russia recently called all their students and diplomats, but people who maybe are citizens, Russian citizens living abroad, they're calling them all home. Now, we don't know why, but these are just not good signs. And I just invite you to kind of pay a little bit of attention and, just don't bury your head in the sand, okay? Let's take a short break, and I'm going to bring Charlie on board, and we'll continue with the show shortly.
So, you're still using the hotel website with the gentleman that played Captain Kirk and Denny Crane, or the goon with a beard in the strange uniform, or the talking lawn gnome to book hotels, car rentals, bed and breakfasts, or cruises. Are you kidding me? Let me let you in on something. You're not really saving money with those. Those are the new retail. Why pay retail when you can book your travel accommodations and pay wholesale? In fact, up to 75% off of standard pricing. Snazzy Traveler is the travel equivalent of the big box wholesale members clubs. But you don't have to go and look for a parking space and wait in line to check out. You can save hundreds, even thousands of dollars on travel. And best of all, it's like having the services of concierge for just 27 cents a day. I'm serious. Snazzy Traveler has all the hotels and B&Bs you're looking for, and more besides. They have all the top car rental companies and cruise ships and tours. But if you want to save big money and get great service, there's only one way you can get the deals I'm talking about. Go to our website, MadisonCPC.com, MadisonCPC.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click on the Snazzy Traveler banner ad and get signed up. You'll soon discover why Inc. 500 rates Snazzy Traveler America's fastest growing travel website. Be smart. Be snazzy. Don't pay retail. Snazzy Traveler.
And we're back. Charlie, you with me?
I am. How are you?
Awesome. I'm tired. It's the end of a long day, but I'm glad to have you on board. Charlie, I've never asked you, how do you pronounce your last name?
Actually, I just sent you a message to that effect. So that's funny. It's Searle, S-E-A-R-L-E. Yeah, people mess it up, but it's easier than they try to make it.
That's
like Pearl, anyway, as you can see on the Facebook message I just sent you. But yes.
Very good. Well, I'm sure glad to have you on board. We chatted a little bit in Facebook here a couple of weeks ago, and then it just so happened we discovered during that chat that we were going to be in the same place at the same time, and we had a chance to meet last Tuesday up by Kansas City, and that was a pleasure. The meeting itself was a pleasure. It was a pleasure getting to meet you. Tell us a little bit. You've got this thing called Ride Against the Tide.
Go ahead. Our meeting seemed to be kind of predestined. That was wild. But the Ride Against the Tide. It's, and people ask me who I'm affiliated with or who's behind it, et cetera. It is a one-man mission, a wild hare that's grown out of control, encouraging people to learn or relearn our history and to either man or reman our posts as individuals, as gatekeepers of the culture and stewards of our own freedoms. And all that sounds kind of lofty, but it's mainly just trying to get people to wake up and look at what's going on and see where we can say no to stuff that we've been tolerating and letting slide for far too long in the culture, and which is related to the politics, and it all has a spiritual underpinning in my worldview. These things are all connected, and everything you were talking about, the scandals, you know, everything across the board, from the people versus the police thing to the political scandals, all the cultural upheaval we see, it's all part of the same problem. And
absolutely.
I just got tired of, you know, I listen to the radio, I read, I try to stay up on stuff, and was getting tired of yelling at the radio and asking when somebody was going to do something and hoping, you know, waiting for cooler heads to prevail in Washington. I don't think there are enough cool heads, and even if there are, they're overwhelmed, you know, outnumbered and demoralized and discouraged and fighting an uphill battle there. So I don't think that waiting for the political realm to fix things that's a losing proposition. So I was waiting for somebody to do something and then got reminded by some tap on the shoulder that we all are somebody and we all have an obligation to do whatever we can here against it's a big lowering of the bar in every area of our lives, the dumbing down of education, the lowering of behavioral standards, and, you know, and people seem to think that it doesn't matter, but I think it does.
Absolutely. And when I was first doing when I first got started in the intro, I mentioned I was going to be having you on, and I kind of prefaced it by by saying along the lines, I said, you were wondering, why doesn't somebody do something? And you were shaving one day and looked in the mirror and went, hey, there's somebody.
Yes, you know, it was that day of the week.
And yeah, and I did the same thing. I mean, that's kind of what got me, you know, the book I wrote and got me on to doing stuff on, you know, my wife tried probably for a year or so to get me on Facebook. I was doing my thing. I don't know what I used to do with my life before Facebook, but I was doing other things. Yeah. And she says, yeah, get on Facebook. I said, why? Well, you know, and
you were never heard from again.
And I was, and I haven't been seen since. Yeah.
Yes.
And it has been fun. I mean, I've gotten to catch up with some people I'd lost contact with. I mean, people I hadn't seen for 30 or 40 years. That aspect of it's been kind of nice, but it is something that is kind of a blessing and a curse, isn't it? I mean, it can be a real time thief, number one. But the other thing I've noticed, and I've written some articles on this too, is the idea that people become anonymous and they become people maybe on Facebook that they might not be in person. And
yeah,
I don't mean that driving
when you get behind the wheel of a car.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not meaning this in a positive note either.
No.
So it's interesting how things, you know, have gone, you know, in our society. And, I don't know. There's some really good things, you know, that we could do if we use the tools that we've got. Like I said, you've got this mission, and I think we all join with you. I mean, my audience is the type of people that, like, you know, that we're all on the same page, you know, pretty much. I don't get too much hate mail, at least not yet. I'm not that big. I'm not.
Good. Well, maybe I'll send you something just so you don't feel left out.
There you go. Okay. Well, I get that on Facebook, but anyway, but as far as the show's concerned, you know, people that listen to the show are pretty much on the same page, and we've looked around and we've gone, this is crazy. You know, how long have we felt like, okay, well, it's election time coming up. Let's really study up on who the candidates are. Let's study up on who these judges are and what their records are, so we know how to vote on them. You know, all the way down to get dog catcher and stuff like that, you know, and we want to really do the right thing. In the meantime, probably 80% of the people are out there just throwing darts at the ballot or voting straight ticket, either R or D. And those of us who actually, you know, try to educate ourselves and are trying to make a difference, find ourselves unable to make any headway. And so I learned a long time ago that wasn't happening at the voting booth. And so, you know, I became involved in various and sundry things, and I know, you know, you have as well. And this mission that you're doing now, you're sort of headed for the East Coast, aren't you?
Yeah, the idea, and I'm working on that as we speak, is to be in Washington for strategic and symbolic reasons the weekend before the election. And it looks like I'm going to be there the weekend after also, actually in Pennsylvania, but an hour away or so from Washington. But yeah,
right.
This is an in-person thing, and a lot of it's preaching to the choir, but I think the choir needs some preaching, because my mission is not to try to convert committed leftists. It's people who are basically on our side of the battle, but have felt helpless or just been disengaged, been distracted. You know, that's how the enemy works, keeps us distracted by our daily concerns and amusements and things while the other guys are working hard to undermine our freedoms. They're working a lot harder at that than we are to preserve them. And I think the founders knew that we couldn't just be good people and mind our own business and have this thing work out, that it took vigilance and actual effort on people's parts to preserve it, to know their history and to look for places to preserve it. And for most of us now, it's the culture, the stuff that we've either looked the other way at or just allowed to creep into our lives, you know, a centimeter at a time. And today, you know, if you turned on your TV and if you'd been asleep for Rip Van Winkle nap, you know, for 20 years and turned on TV or just wandered around in the culture, you would be horrified, and you still can be. But it's about the stuff beneath the politics that, and, you know, calling on good people to wake up a little bit. And
right.
People I talk to say, well, what can I do? I feel, you know, there's nothing I can do. I'm doing what I'm supposed to. But it's about getting out there and looking where you can in your sphere of influence to make a difference and to not accept stuff. And, you know, goes to the schools, if you have kids in schools, to look at what they're being taught. You know, fight against that if you need to. Pull them out if you need to. There's that's one of the biggest areas because, like, some of the studies or the stats and things you see, these guys, you know, the man on the street with a microphone on campus, they're not being taught a whole lot of stuff that's equipping them to fight this battle.
Right. You mentioned that. It's been a while since Jay Leno's been on, and I don't watch a lot of regular TV, but I do know what from watching what they call it, jaywalking. They had Jay Leno out there, and he would just go out there.
He spawned that thing. Yeah.
He sort of started that, and then I think on O'Reilly's show, Jesse Waters did it, called Waters World, and Jay, I never really heard him say too much about how he picked people, but now Jesse, I've heard him say, he says, I go out and I pick like 24 people that will talk to me. He's not like picking out, like, he's not like letting people go. He just tries to talk to people. And the first 24 that talk to him, you know, get the deal.
He's
and
not
it's
editing
amazing.
It for dumbness.
No. It's incredible how dumb these people are.
I'm sure they're functionally bright people. They just don't have any inputs. They're not getting taught any of the stuff that we kind of took for granted that was part of a rounded education.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like you said, the rounding education is gone, long gone. It was probably leaving when we were in school. But I mean, I still felt like I got a pretty good education. I mean, I was taught and I understood. Of course, the Cold War was in the middle of the Cold War. I mean, I still remember doing the drills of hiding under my desk from a nuclear bomb. I looked at that desk and I went, really? But I didn't realize that desk was that sturdy. But
well, I'll have to defer to your seniority because I didn't get to do that. So I'll have to be nice to you.
No, you didn't get to do that.
You're obviously my elder.
Yeah, okay. Well, we did that. We hid under our desk and waited for the flash and those sorts of things. And you know, so I mean, we saw the danger, you know, as I was growing up of what was going on, and we studied, you know, not just Hitler, but we studied about Mao and Stalin and the things that the brutal things that they did and the failures of communism and socialism. And now socialism, my grandkids, you know, will tell you, you say, well, do you know what socialism is? That's like we all get together and talk that, you know, we're social. No, I mean like the form of government. That's a form of government. Yeah. They can't tell you anything it's certainly not negative.
I don't think it's any accident that it's happening this way. It's part
of the
effort to get people where you can control them, where they're not going to have any context for things. If they don't know the truth, they're not going to know a counterfeit. And I don't think it's an accident. I think there are forces at work that are wanting it to be this way. And there's, you know, there's celestial and people doing their bidding. And there are a lot of unwitting accomplices in this culture war. Who mean well, but are part of the problem.
Exactly right. And, you know, we look back at some of the, you know, at the progressive movement that began at the, with Teddy Roosevelt and came on, you know, forward from there and some of the sea changes that happened in our, not just our government, but in our society. We've kind of had wild swings of things, you know, I know we've discussed in the past about the spiritual enlightenment that sort of happened prior to the revolution, with the Black Robe Brigade and things like that. And then it happened again in the era of the Civil War. After Pearl Harbor, obviously, brought the nation together and people became, you know, closer to God. 9/11 did to a certain extent, but I recall vividly how fast that went away. You know, we were all Well, one after 9/11, and we were all, you know, the churches filled up and everything, but it didn't take very long before that went away. And we started turning to government.
Warnings of Islamophobia, quote unquote, came out not very long after that. There was that kind of backlash, and it seemed over the top then, but part of the deal today too.
Yeah, and there's been so many things. You know, we started off. You know, we get this political correctness stuff. Political, you know, the idea of political correctness is nothing but stifling free speech. We don't have the opportunity to say, you know, what we want or say how we feel because we might offend somebody. Somebody might have to go to their safe space. You know, I grew up with the old saying of sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. Yeah, words can hurt you, but they hurt your feelings. But okay, you know, I learned to suck it up and go on. You know, but we've moved into a society that can't have their feelings hurt. We can't be disagreed with. I'm sort of working on an article right now about, you know, how things have changed to the point that, you know, you want, say, Donald Trump for president and I want Ted Cruz for president. And suddenly we have to hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why.
Reason discourse is one of the casualties.
Exactly. We can't have a reason, and we can't even agree to disagree anymore. You know, we now have to hate each other.
Speakers being shouted down on campuses, and I don't know of any case where it was someone representing the left getting shouted down. It's always this.
That never happens. It's always somebody on the right that's always shouted down. And the other thing that I like to always take note is whenever people talk about, well, we need to learn to work together and compromise never goes towards the Constitution. Compromise always goes further away. And compromise never goes closer to God. It always goes away from God and away from the Constitution.
Moral gravity pulls us away.
Yeah.
You know, the natural course is to be pulled down and away from what's truthful and good. And if we just sit here, that gravity will keep pulling us farther away from our moorings.
Right. And I know a lot of your message ties the morals and virtue and everything like that together into the message. And of course, that's something that our founders were very aware of. I think every founder at some point or other made mention of how this form of government only works with people who have morals and virtue. Ben Franklin was probably the least religious guy of the bunch, and he said it too. You know, so they understood that they weren't going to force you to be a Christian. They weren't going to force you to believe in God, but they understood that that's where those ideals came from. And that was the only way this system works is through fairness, and a stability to God and to that Constitution.
And people who behave along those standards, who hold themselves to that standard, regardless of what they believe, religiously, spiritually, you're going to have a healthy society because it's an honest system and people are bound by those common threads. And it doesn't matter what you believe. If you behave that way toward one another, you're going to be better off.
Right. And you don't have to be a Christian or Jewish or whatever like that to have those standards and those virtues and morals. I've got personal friends who are atheists or agnostics or whatever like that, but they're good people. They'll stop and help somebody alongside the road that's got a flat tire. They'll help somebody get a shirt if they don't have a shirt. They'll loan somebody a buck if they're down and out. You know, when I've tried talking to them, some of them will admit, well, yeah, that probably does come from that religious, you know, thing. I just don't, go along with that or whatever, you know, in my personal life, which is, that's their choice. That's fine. You know, The progressives want to deny that there's a connection. The progressives basically want to say that goodness comes from government. Goodness comes from those who are smart enough to rule over those who are too dumb to rule. I don't know if I'm saying it quite right, but you know what I mean.
It's true. And then you look at history would get you off of that pretty quick. But the problem is that we have a whole generation that is not going to have any historical context for all this.
Right. I posted a little cartoon-like thing on my Facebook page yesterday, day before. It's gotten shared quite a bit. It says, those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. And those who do know history are doomed to watch others learn the lessons that they should have learned by reading it.
Yeah. Yeah, talking about moral standards, I heard Ravi Zacharias, I don't remember where exactly this came from, but and it might have been Dennis Prager debating an atheist or agnostic who denied any connection between good behavior, a healthy society, and Christian or Judeo-Christian beliefs. And he posited the question that if you were downtown in some city at 2 a.m. with your car broken down in a dark part of town and a group of men came and approached you on the street in the dark, would you rather know that they'd just come out of a bar or a Bible study?
Yeah, and, exactly.
And he had to acknowledge the no-brainer answer to that.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's a good illustration.
An excellent one, yes.
So, well, this mission is an hour-long thing. We started in Colorado and so far done actual presentations in Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, and Kansas. And what it is basically an hour of prayer and music and personal testimonies. My personal story involves the kind of recovery and the kind of miracle that I think it's going to take to reclaim our republic. You know, miracles have been a big part of our history, and we wouldn't exist if it weren't for a miracle, because if you just played out the American Revolution on paper, you know, if it was a fantasy football league, we wouldn't have won. So it's taken providence all along the way, and it was that kind of thing that pulled me out of, a doomed nowhere situation, and the same principles of gratitude and humility and courage that required for that are going to be required from us in the bigger picture to, you know, and that the one of our kind of sub slogans is too, is reclaiming the American Republic, one heart and one mind at a time. And I think that's how it gets done too. This isn't somewhere a million people all of a sudden wake up. It's one individual decision at a time, one person deciding not to go along with something, not to, you know, to turn off their cable, not to watch a certain TV show, to quit some club and join another one that's going to be more part of the solution. You know, it's little stuff like that that on the surface would not seem to have anything to do with saving our country, but all of these things do. You know, I think all connected, and that's the way it happens.
And it's kind of like compounding interest. You know, when you make a change in your life, you're more likely to touch somebody that's, you know, in your inner circle, and then they will touch somebody, and they will touch somebody. So it's a type of thing.
The ripple effect.
The ripple effect. It's not like you're going to have to go out and touch a million people yourself. You could go out and touch 300 people, but those 300 people could all touch 300. And before you know it, you're at a million. And so those are the sorts of things that we need to understand. So many people feel like they're alone. You know, our numbers are so low that we can't make a difference. And so as long as we keep believing that, we don't try. And so it's good
media
to have people
you
like
believe
you out there.
Yeah, media would have you believe we're outnumbered, we're part of the minority, and they try to marginalize people of faith. And any TV show you see that has a recurring Christian character, they're all caricatures, they're all screwballs. You know, they're either self-righteous or they've got some fundamental flaw. And I think the issue is that the people that write these shows have never been around people of true faith. They don't know how they act. So
exactly.
I think they're it's like a unicorn for them. They're not sure how to to describe it. But the media also, the culture is where it wants us to separate the spiritual element of our lives from everything else, which doesn't work, as the founders knew.
Right.
You know, you're supposed to check your religion at the door or whatever they say, and that's not doable. Any faith that can be left at home or left behind you when you go to work or into your relationships isn't real. And the the founders never had that in mind anyway. They knew that the spiritual element was a fundamental, essential part of what they were doing in pretty much every area and every issue.
So. Exactly. Yeah. It's interesting that, like you say, we have these encounters, and we never know. I liken it sometimes. We don't know who we're talking to. You know, there was a man named Abraham that one time looked up and saw a couple of strangers coming, and he says, "Oh, here comes somebody that looks like they're hungry and tired. I think I'll take care of them." And who did they turn out to be? They were angels. And so we don't know who we're touching. And so we need to understand that there's people out there who can help us and all like that. But they've got to know we're there, and we've got to know they're there. And we can't just be putting our head in the sand. There's a real feeling in America right now that this is America. America's stable. America's strong. It's the dollar. Everything will always be the way it is. And we have to understand that's not so likely, you know, true. And most of the time when people change, when do they really change? I don't know, you know, you haven't told your full story.
When the pain of staying the same gets worse than the pain of the unknown of changing.
Then the remedy, yeah. That's exactly right. Most people do not change until they get to that point. And that point's different for different people. So we can't, you know, you can't make people change. You know, you can't grab an addict and make him stop being an addict. He has to decide, I can't do this anymore. I've got to change.
Really uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I appreciate I listen to Glenn Beck some. I know some people like him, some people don't. But the bottom line is I respect the guy because he woke up one day, and like you said, it got so painful. He'd lost his family. He'd lost his kids. He lost his job. And he'd had one friend that kept telling him, "I can help you, but you're going to have to want it." And when he got low enough and painful enough and all like that is when he turned around. And he looks at himself now. He hasn't had a drink in what, I don't know, 25 years or something like that, 20 years.
It's been a while,
but
man.
He still considers himself an alcoholic because he is. He knows if he takes that one drink, it's back.
I appreciate the fact that he's one of the few people on talk radio and big media that acknowledges the spiritual element, because even a lot of the people
on
our side, the good guys, are uncomfortable with it, and that's more of the
enemy's
work.
They're afraid to talk about it.
It's keeping the political people out of the spiritual realm because it's scary, and keeping the spiritual people out of the political realm because it's all messy and they might get their hands dirty. And
exactly.
It doesn't work without these things engaging and being, connected.
That's
part of the thing I'm mentioning to people. And I've had churches say, "We'd like to have you do this thing," but they are worried about their tax exemption, which is so ironic, because what I'm talking about is the freedoms that this is, you know, that kind of thing is specifically trying to undermine.
Exactly.
And I've had some interviews set up with local radio and that fell through, and I'm pretty positive that the spiritual element of my presentation is what scared them off. And these are the good guys. So it's
exactly.
It's a tricky business, but we can't back down.
No, we can't. And with that in mind, what else would you like to add about your presentation and like locations and things like
that?
Really,
really good. Let's say that. It's really amazing.
it's awesome. And we're not going to tell you about it. You got to go hear it.
Yeah, I'd give myself, I've gone from like a C to an A minus, so it just depends
good.
On what night you
awesome.
Show up. But
you
can see some of the background on facebook.com/rideagainstthetide. And I'll be posting the next leg of this thing within a few days where it's going to be. It'll be the last leg of the road trip portion of this for the time being. It's going to be 2 weeks more or less. Looking at Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, Pennsylvania, possibly Florida. And if anybody listening is between Colorado and Washington, D.C., and would like me to come to their place, it's a super easy setup. It's just me and my guitar, and I have a PA that I can use if necessary. but there's not a lot of moving parts and there's no money involved. We've done it so far in homes, in churches, in community centers. So any venue, no venue too large or too small. And so far, I think everyone agree that it's been a net benefit. And again, this, the idea is just to be some small part of the greater solution. And my another one of my six slogans or so, I get a new one every couple of days, is that I'd rather have the miracle happen in some small part because of me than in spite of me.
Exactly.
You know? So,
yep.
But
well,
another picture, you're either going with the flow or you can ride against the tide. How's that? I should trademark that, huh?
Yeah, you should. Yeah, that's very good. And that's what we tend to do is, I mean, why is it that we fight against it? You know, remember when Paul got hit up the side of the head with the two before on his way to Damascus?
Yes.
He says, why do you kick against, you know, why do you kick against the goad? Why do you,
it
you know, you're
hard for you to kick against the goads.
Exactly.
Told, yes.
Exactly. And, in other words, he said, I'm going to make it easier for you.
And, you know, what people don't realize those goats, those are the sticks that the shepherds used or the handlers used to prod the oxen. They were sharp. And if you kick those things, it probably doesn't feel real good. So
every time you kicked, you poked yourself. Right.
Yep. Yeah. So, but it's been a good thing. Like I said, it was kind of a wild hair, but I decided if I was going to do it, I'm not getting any younger and things aren't getting any better. So,
yeah. Well, who's funding you? Are you just doing this yourself?
Yeah. Well, George Soros and the Koch brothers were fighting over who would get to underwrite this thing.
Okay.
I turned down
that's cool.
Both of them. I didn't want to be beholden to either one. So I turned
away
all their money.
That's probably wise.
Actually, that's not true. I would take George Soros's money. If he called as long as there weren't any strings attached, I would take his check today. But now it's self-funded.
Absolutely.
And if you go to the Facebook page, there is a donate thing, and I'm actually doing a push this week to try to get this last leg of it covered because I got to pay my own bills and a little per diem. I travel pretty cheap, and I've been blessed in that gotten to stay with folks at their homes and stuff. And my car gets good gas mileage, so it's not a big overhead project, but it's not free either. So if you go to facebook.com/rideagainstthetide, there is an opportunity to donate, and it is all appreciated, and it's I think it's a worthwhile cause, and I don't think it's going to make things worse. So as if it won't hurt and it might help, why not do it?
Exactly. And Charlie, an open invitation, if you're, you know, when you're on your way home, Kansas is sort of between Washington and Colorado. We do
is
have a bed
Sylvia
and breakfast
between anywhere.
Sylvia is between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out if it's on the way to anything, but
I'm
sure.
I'm just off of US 50, so I'm not too far out in the sticks. I'd love to, you know, if you want a place to stay on your way home, you're welcome to stay with us.
Well, that's worth a little detour, so I'll definitely keep you in mind. I do appreciate the opportunity to talk.
Yeah, you bet. We got a few minutes left here. That's right. You said you were going to be putting your schedule on your Facebook page. And once again, that's Facebook at Ride Against the Tide. So you guys
just Facebook
take a look
slash,
at that.
Yeah, Ride Against the Tide.
You're right on the page.
There's a historically terrific impersonation of Ben Franklin on one of the videos. So anybody listening needs to catch that too. Yeah, actually, it's about 6 seconds in a barrister's wig I borrowed from my sister. But given our production budget, that's about what you're going to get.
You've got more guts than I have. I don't mind. You know, I'm one of those guys like on Facebook, you know, I'm anonymous. Of course, I guess I do put my picture on Facebook. A lot of people don't do that, but I do put where I live. People don't, you know, I mean, if somebody wanted to drive out here and try to knock me in the head, I guess they're welcome to try. But
that's funny that you said brave. That takes guts to hurt somebody. I think we were playing music. I played with a band here in Monument, Colorado, and somebody came up and said, you need to be really brave to do that. And I wasn't sure if that was a compliment or not. So, meaning, you're not that good. You have to be really brave to get out there.
Be really
get
brave
in front
to get
of people
out there.
Like that.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking,
no,
I was thinking
a good
Brave.
Thing, and so far the feedback has been terrific, and everybody I talk to, I've had people with whom I disagree politically, but who say this is a good thing, because I'm not talking about parties or candidates
exactly.
or specific elections. It's about the bigger picture and the stuff that, you know, ties all this together.
Well, that's an important note too, is that the parties are not going to save us. That's for sure. And to try to align yourself to a party or something like that is suicide as far as I'm concerned. As I watch these parties, they're both consumed with themselves and their own power, and they really don't care about what happens to anybody else. And it's terribly frustrating, especially when I look at the Republican Party, who's supposed to stand for smaller government and an alliance with godly principles and less spending and lower taxes, things like that. And then you look at what they've done in their leadership, are going, well, that's like two different places. And, you know, that's there's no semblance of reality there.
Yeah. I think there needs to be a peer pressure from outside to make these people afraid to act the way they've been acting. You know, they used to run people out of town, and people used to resign in shame, but that doesn't happen anymore.
Right. And I did an article the other day about, and I likened it to basically what's happened is, I can't remember when I realized, I guess it was maybe when Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein came out. I always thought that Frankenstein was the monster, but Frankenstein was the scientist, and he invented it. I mean, he came up with this monster, and then the monster went out and, he created something that got out of control, and then it went out and terrorized the countryside. Is that not what our government has done? Our states created this monster, and they've allowed it to get out of control. And
yeah, it's
and
not
so
nearly as lovable as Peter Boyle was.
Not quite. And certainly not as the one.
Not
on,
as good a dancer either.
Not as good a dancer. No, that was pretty good. him and Gene Wilder. Way to go. Anyway,
yeah, it is a monster, and it's not going to stop itself. It's going to. Power is self-perpetuating, and the momentum, it's not going to stop on its own.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, Charlie, I'm certainly glad you joined me tonight, and I wish you Godspeed and all like that on your mission. I know it's a difficult one. It'll probably be pretty thankless, but
not really, but
I'm in on the large scheme of things. I mean, you personally are going to feel good about it. I know you already do, but I guess what I'm thinking about is like on a grander scale, nobody's going to like write an article in the New York Times and say, oh, Charlie, boy, he was out there doing a good job. Way to go, Charlie.
Probably not the New York Times anyway.
No, not the New York Times. Maybe the Monument Centennial will, right?
Maybe the Washington Times.
Maybe the Washington Times. That would be awesome. I would take that one as well. So I wish you good luck and you'll be in our prayers, and I hope that you do really well, and I hope I get to see you again here sometime in the near future.
Okay, thanks again, Michael, and hopefully we will see each other.
Okay, thanks, Charlie. Bye-bye.
All right, take care.
Well, folks, that pretty well winds up our show for tonight. Go to Ride Against the Tide there on that Facebook page and check out Charlie. See if he's going to be in your area. Maybe get a hold of him and see if he can't, put something on for you if you're in that in the eastern part of the United States. And certainly, if you feel so moved, maybe go in there and shoot a little cash his way to kind of help him. This is a mission that, in spite of the fact that he's self-funding, it would always help to put a little gas in the car and those sorts of things. And I'm sure once in a while he has to put up a hotel and buy a meal or two. So once again, we thank you for being with us here at Madison's Open Rebellion Radio and the Voice of Reason. And we hope to see you again soon. We are probably going to start doing more podcasts. It's a little difficult to get people sometimes on their you know, with a schedule to get people on at particular times and everything. So I may start doing a little bit fewer live shows and going more to the podcast sort of arrangement that you can listen to anytime. But anyway, we once again, we thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time.